Welcome back to another edition of the Pennsylvania Prisons and Parole Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Tarkowski. Our tour around the Commonwealth to learn more about the DOC's state correctional institutions continues today. Later in the show, we'll visit with two employees who opened SCI Pine Grove more than 20 years ago, Jessica Parcell and Lieutenant Jason Townsend. Up first is a trip to Northumberland County and SCI Cole Township for a visit with Superintendent Tom McGinley. Superintendent McGinley, thanks for joining us today. Can you start by telling us about SCI Cole Township? What makes it unique and special?
Well, SCI Cole Township is situated in Northumberland County. We are probably, I would state, the largest employer in Northumberland County. SCI Cole Township came to light in 1993. And it's, you know, ours is certainly unique, Ryan, in the sense that, you know, we're from the coal region, obviously. So we have a, you know, the anthracite coal region is known for hard work and hardworking people and, you know, people devoted to what they do. So the interesting thing, you know, relating to our little history here is the coal mines really began to shutter in, I would say, the 1950s, 1960s. And obviously, these facilities provided just a huge economic boost to the area. Because coal mining as a profession was really waning and corrections was new to everyone in this area. It wasn't long until after the facility opened in 1993 that they realized that they had great employees to settle down here and create a life for themselves and pass it down. Obviously, we're in the second generations now and with employees and it's been a good ride.
You mentioned that a lot of our facilities are kind of in the more remote areas, and SCI Cole Township is no exception. How does that work, being the largest employer in the area? How do you guys interact with the community? How does the community interact with you?
We have a very good relationship with the community as a whole, and that goes beyond our staff at this facility. I mean, you know, the facility infuses a lot of money back into the community in general. Just by, you know, purchasing local when we can and doing things to ensure that we have local businesses involved and so on and so forth. We work with the hospitals extremely closely here. Obviously, we have Shamokin Geisinger right down the road from us, which is an asset for us. But at the same time, I think it goes beyond our staff. We have two inmate organizations here that are second to none. And I would say that in the state, the amount of monies they have donated to the local communities as well in the several hundred thousand dollar range. So we donate a lot of money through our local inmate organizations back into the community. And that goes to schools. It goes to just areas in need as far as we recently donated to Special Olympics. We've donated to St. Joe's Center up in Scranton, which is a home for severely disabled people. There right now, there is a story just on the news for a young girl who has a very difficult road ahead of her health wise. And it was entitled Van for Violet. So our inmates are actually now getting a donation ready to provide to that family to donate to a handicap van. So it's just a plethora of donations that they have put out throughout the years to include the Coppice Camp at Mount Carmel Area High School, which in conjunction with Bucknell University gives underprivileged kids the opportunity to actually experience a college campus 2 weeks out of the year in the summertime. And without our inmates' donation, last year, 80 kids wouldn't have had that opportunity. So we're proud of that.
I think that's one of the things that people are most shocked to learn about when I talk to them about my job or, you know, when I'm out talking to different people. I had a reporter one time talking to me, and she was shocked to learn about the existence of inmate organizations. She had all kinds of questions about how they decide who to support, how do they raise their money. And I said, you know, it's a lot like you and me. We support the folks that mean something to us for whatever reason. But can you talk to us about how they go about raising their money?
Sure. We have sales throughout the year from both organizations. Items they generally wouldn't be able to get on commissary, but items that present no safety or security concerns within the facility. So those organizations, obviously with a little markup in the price, will sell that to the other inmates within the facility, and that's how they gain their funds. And you know, the profits from those sales ultimately go towards the donations that we speak about. And, you know, Lifeline, one of the organizations, Lifeline, is a long-term, that's a long-term, basically inmates with long-term sentences. 10 years or more. So these are inmates that have really settled into, you know, their incarceration in terms of just knowing that as they get older and they get into positive things within the facility, that there's a lot of positive things outside this facility as well. So that's how we go about basically gaining the, I would say the membership knows that they have to be at a certain level, but sales generally are what provides the, you know, the capital that we have that we can then, and the profits that we can donate into the community. And we're about to have a little run-a-thon in the facility that's going to benefit St. Jude. I mean, so we we want to get out there and we want to be part of the community and give back when we need to.
You mentioned the lifers and the long-term inmates, and it's very interesting that your facility it really does become their home. They're there for decades and upon decades, and this is a way for them to kind of channel some positive energy, make a positive difference.
Agreed. I mean, that's, you know, it's their way to atone, essentially. And they realize, you know, the harm that they caused through their crimes in the community, but it doesn't define them who they are now. Some of these individuals were 18, 19 years old when they came in. And some of these individuals are now 60, 70 years old, especially those doing life sentences. So these gentlemen have grown just like the rest of us throughout the years, and realize that positivity is the branch you want to hold on to. Negativity does nothing but hurt yourself and certainly those you love around you. So they've really champion that cause and realize that while they're going to be here, they're going to make a positive difference, not only in their lives, because it does impact their lives in a positive way, knowing that they are benefiting, especially those in really in need in the community and taking care of children who are disadvantaged and things of that nature. So it's just a win-win situation all the way around for these guys.
We're chatting with Tom McGinley, superintendent at SEI Cold Township. You mentioned when we first started talking, opening the doors of the facility in the early 90s and now onto your maybe second generation of staff. It's one of the things that surprised me when I started working for the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections, the number of folks who have in some way, it's a family affair. And a lot of times they've had a cousin or a brother or a mom or dad that worked in the field of corrections. And now they are when I see them. How is the like the longevity among your staff?
Well, longevity is good amongst the individuals who really want to focus on the betterment of not only themselves, but on those that are confined here. So, you know, we do really well with maintaining the staff once we have them. I think we have a very good culture here. It's a welcoming culture. The issue, obviously, now since COVID, I'm sure you guys have spoken about, is just trying to get the additional staff you need in here in these roles. Now, we have no issue with the, you know, roles related to maybe psychology or counseling or things of that nature. But when you get into the security aspect of things, the correctional officer route, you know, we like a lot of other places now are struggling to bring some staff in. And why, I don't know. I mean, we've had a very good recruiting process, but those that have been here, I think don't take their careers for granted. They appreciate them. As you said, I've been here 27 years. I've worked with some of our correctional officers or counselors. I've worked with their fathers. I worked with their uncles. They have since retired, and now the new generation comes in. And the nice thing about that is, of course, when you have seasoned correctional people who did their job and did it well, retire, and then they have their relation or their, you know, whatever they are, their children coming into the facility to work, those individuals are generally well-versed in how to succeed in this department. And that, you know, that first line of success is good communication and just, you know, treating everyone with respect. And we've had a very good outcomes because of that.
Did I hear you wrong? I could have sworn you just said 27 years. I can't believe you've been with the department that long. What keeps you coming back?
Well, I'll tell you, I enjoy what I do. You know, I've always felt like there was a purpose here, a purpose certainly bigger than me. I started in activities. I was actually en route to the New Jersey State Police at one point, and due to some family health issues with my grandmother, I decided to stick around. My brother, who was in the state police at the time, so what are you going to do now? I said, you know what? Never thought about corrections. I remember driving up here for the first time, and I see the razor wire and kind of get a knot in my stomach, like most people do who aren't familiar with it. But knew I was coming in for an interview and had made that decision for the activities department, and it was the best decision I ever made. 27 years later, here I am. I came up through activities and corrections counselor and unit manager onto CCPM at Muncie, which was a very good experience for me. I was always an empathetic person. I think I gained a lot more empathy there due to the nature of the population and the mental health issues I dealt with up there, you know, with the population. And promote the deputy and then back here to superintendent. And it's always been my goal when you're leading these facilities is to lead them in a manner that, as I said to my administration, the first meeting I had with them when I came back here as superintendent in January of 16, you know, I want every inmate in this facility treated as if it was my own son or your own son incarcerated here. And I meant that. You know, that's something where I think people lose perspective at times and realize that life is funny. But while you're here to be a professional and do the job that you need to do and do it with the utmost fairness and also at times compassion. I heard a quote once where they said, you know, 9 out of 10 times when you see improper behavior, you shouldn't get angry. If you knew the whole story, you'd probably break your heart. And I think a lot of times people, that's lost on people just from a lot of, just through 27 years, a lot of the experiences I know these offenders have had throughout their life really has impacted them, you know, in a terrible fashion for real.
You never know somebody's full story, right?
That's the truth.
You started out an entry-level position as a facility leader. Now, do you kind of you look at the maybe corrections officer trainees or the new activities people that come in? Do you look at them and say, you know what, someday I can see them as a superintendent? Like, how does that mentorship thing work?
Oh, we have an orientation week where, you know, we sit down with all the new employees and answer a lot of questions and give them a little bit of advice. And I tell them the same, you know, this group that just came in this week, I'm telling them the same thing I've told every other group. I sat in the same seat they did, you know, 27 years ago, looking at then Superintendent Gillis, who was the first superintendent at Gold Township, you know, break it down to me and tell me what he believed I need to do to succeed in corrections and just to better the atmosphere. And I passed that along. And the mentorship part of that is we have a phenomenal mentoring committee here. We are heavily involved. As soon as an employee comes in, they're assigned a mentor. I've been a firm believer. And I think, you know, whether it's inside corrections or outside the corrections field, that I've been a Tigger all my life. There's not a lot of people. And certainly you may know, Ryan, there's Tiggers and Eeyores. And, you know, I've been a Tigger all my life. And I tell everybody who comes in, you know, be a Tigger, be positive. There's, you know, life's too short to be an Eeyore. And, you know, I just, that's our message to the employees when they come in. So
that guy always bounced around too much for my liking, but I get what you're saying. I do like the metaphor. 1993 SEI Cold Township. That's right in the heart of the prototypical phase. So I don't imagine you have anything special to talk about in terms of layout or facility plan, but what are some of the vocational or educational programs at your facility that make it unique?
Vocational, educationally, we offer everything that we need to offer and then some. We have a full barbering program. We have automotive. We did have building and trades that has since changed to custodial maintenance. We have electrical programs. We're working with the Bureau now, the Department of Education, to bring in other vocational programs. We did have a CITV shop here. CI was just in. They're actually looking to bring in more industry, which I'm excited about. But yeah, generally speaking, we have HVAC. Our success rate with GEDs is astronomically high here. My teachers do a terrific job preparing these students to get their GEDs and then go beyond that. We have, which is really unique to us, and we've been doing this since I came back here as superintendent. We have an inside-out program with Bucknell University. I have a phenomenal relationship with Bucknell. And we've also worked with Bloomsburg University. We've worked with E. Cornell. So, you know, our inmates do a lot of correspondence courses outside the facility. So we're constantly trying to build our educational, you know, stamina up, so to speak. And we continue to do that. We're proud of what we do here educationally.
What's the feedback like from the higher education outlets that come for to the facility? What's the benefit to them and to the incarcerated students?
Well, I could tell you that the last professor said that it was life-changing for her. We have had a lot of individuals come through here, and especially the inside students. I mean, they have just a unique ability to talk about, generally with these college kids, life experiences. And Bucknell University, you know, a lot of people refer to Bucknell as a mini Ivy school. They have a lot of students that come from wealthier backgrounds. And we've had students from, you know, they pull in students from all across the country. And when they come here and I tell them, you know, they're of course unsure before the first class when we're going through our security briefing, but I tell them that it's going to be arguably one of the best classes they've taken at Bucknell University. And at the end, when we have our outbriefs, the majority feel that way. The experiences that the inmates talk about that they then can understand by the end of the class really, I think, is what makes the class in and of itself a success. You have the students coming in, like I said, from backgrounds where they came into stable environments, generally speaking, and, you know, came from backgrounds that where they weren't poor, but more middle class or even higher than that. And, you know, they get to see, well, you know, some things that they would never have seen before. And I know some of those students have actually told me after they had left here and actually contacted me for letters of recommendation when they were going to law school because they wanted to get into the components of the law to advocate for changes in the laws and so on and so forth. So, I mean, it's been life changing for them in the sense of career purpose. And certainly our inside students realize that they belong, that they can participate in these programs and succeed. So I think that's been great for us.
So the traditional students actually come and take classes inside the facility?
Yep, it's 12 and 12. We have 12 outside students, 12 inside students, and a Bucknell University professor will run that, an actual class inside the facility. So it's been, you know, we've had every semester we've had inside out programs with Bucknell. And then we've also had eCornell and things of that nature come about as well because of it. We want to reach out to the community, want to reach out to who we need to, and that establishment with Bucknell obviously just reverted to, we have a floral program where we grow flowers here in conjunction with Bucknell and a community group out of our local community in Shamokin and a floral group, and we grow the flowers here, we'll cut the flowers, the inmates have extra jobs. They feel rewarded because of it, and they have a sense of accomplishment because we take those bouquets, Bucknell and the floral group in Shamokin, they'll form the bouquets, and my staff deliver them to nursing homes and shut-ins and individuals who are in hospitals and so on and so forth. So we've just extended our hand in the community as much as we can.
What would you say you're most proud of, you and your team's work at SEI Cole Township?
Changing people's life for the better. That's as simple as it gets. Hearing from inmates after they leave to say how successful they are and how well they're doing, how they're productive members in society, that's the most rewarding aspect of all of corrections, is to be there for people, do the right thing, put them on a better path, and watch them succeed once they get out.
Thanks to Superintendent McGinley and the entire team at SEI Cole Township. Now let's head west to Indiana County and SEI Pine Grove. We're joined today by a couple of longtime SEI Pine Grove employees. Lieutenant Jason Townsend and Administrative Officer Jessica Purcell have both been around since the year 2000, right when the facility opened. Let's start with you, Lieutenant. Can you tell us about your background and what brought you to SEI Pine Grove?
When I got out of the military, they were actually in the process of opening this prison up. So I applied and I was fortunate enough to get hired in the first group of trainees. So I started here in November 20th of 2000 as a trainee. And then after my trainee year, I was a CO1 and I pretty much got recruited right into the RHU and worked there for the next 7 years. I was promoted in 2007 to sergeant and then went right back to the RHU as a sergeant and worked there for a few more years. After that, it was 2011, I started working the young adult offender housing units. And I worked there for, it was approximately 9 years as a sergeant on those blocks. And then I took a bid as the training sergeant here. And I did that for about 3 years. And then I applied for the intelligence gathering lieutenant position, which I currently hold right now, that I've been in for almost, it's been about 2.5 years now.
I want to talk a little bit more about the Young Adult Offender Program a little bit later, but first that I also want to welcome in Jessica Purcell, Administrative Officer and Clerical Supervisor, another longtime employee. Jessica, tell us about your career path.
I started in the same month, November 20th, 2000. I came from the local Indiana hospital at the time, working with 21 women in a billing department. And then I was excited about, oh, let's try, you know, a great new job that was just opening. The prison was just built. And I, again, was selected to be the first group of people hired at Pine Grove. So very apprehensive at first. I was scared, thinking the same thing that everybody saw on TV about a prison work relationship. So I came in kind of scared, but once we got here, the great part was we worked here and we were trained here at the same time from the academy. So we had the advantage of, you know, working and training here, not even like the prisons that you see on TV. But I started out as a clerk typist one, and throughout the years, I worked with the deputies till 8 years later, I worked with the superintendents. So we had five of those, including a new one just recently with Superintendent Mark Brothers. So I haven't got to work with him, but I've worked with him in other aspects of the job. It's just a great world of promotions and movement into corrections as well.
I don't want to just skip past 24 years. You guys both started in the year 2000. It's now 2024. That's quite a career. What has kept you coming back? And are there other longtime employees that like started with you guys right when the doors opened?
You know what? It's family. I have to say myself, I think Jason would agree with me on this as well. When we came here, all of us were new. All of us were very young and excited and scared, and yet we just became a family. We did everything together. Like when, of course, being the first young adult offender program, we were the limelight of Pennsylvania, and we got to make it happen and we got to see it all. And then we started working everything, cleaning and cooking and you name it. We did the whole thing because we didn't have the inmates until January of 2001. So it was just exciting for us because everybody was together and everybody worked together and we all remain family to this day.
Yeah, it's been 24 years now, and I believe there's only a handful of us still left from that original training class that started. A lot have passed or have retired. A lot have moved on to, you know, other institutions for promotions. And yeah, there's only a handful of us left here now.
Tell me about Pine Grove a little bit. What are the unique programs and features of your facility? You kind of opened in the time where they call them prototypical facilities.
Probably the most unique feature that we have here is the YAO program, the Young Adult Offender Program. That's what this prison was built for. It was the first prison in the state of Pennsylvania for housing young adult offenders. When we first opened up, we were able to have inmates that were under the age of 18. And that's something that has changed to where they have to be segregated. So the 17 and any inmates under 18 years of age, they were transferred to another facility. So now we only have inmates that are in our program between the ages of 18 and 22.
What makes that a special program as from the other parts of the population?
Whenever we first opened, it was mainly based around behavioral therapy. So now the new YAO, there's a strong emphasis on cognitive behavioral therapy, where the goal is if you change the way they think, you will change the way that they act. It's a four-phase program that we utilize for the YAOs. And it goes by color-coded phases. We have the red phase, a yellow phase, a blue phase, and then a green phase. The red phase is the first phase, and it lasts for about 8 weeks. in that first initial phase, it's they focus on health and wellness, and they start their groups like the Courage One groups. And like I said, that takes approximately 8 weeks. Once they're done with the red phase, they will move on to the yellow phase, and that lasts about 12 weeks. And they could take Courage Two, the MET five stages of change. They go through problem solving programs. Each phase that they go through, there's more privileges and more responsibility. So it gives them a little bit of incentive. So
are these like classroom learning that's going on, or is it like practical applications? Yeah, what are these programs like?
It's classroom learning, and there's a strong emphasis on education. If they don't have a GED or a diploma, then they will have 6 hours of school a day if they, like I said, if they don't have a diploma or if they have an IEP. The school program, it mirrors high school education. Like I said, there's six periods a day, and it's a strong focus on education here for these kids.
What are the challenges of working with such a young population?
It's completely different than working with an adult population. They are very impulsive. They're very reactive. On an adult housing unit, technically, you know, you will have like one corrections officer, one working on a wing on that unit. With the YAOs, you have two. Typically, there's a lot more incidents with the YAOs. And as far as corrections officers go, some corrections officers, they like working with the YAOs, and other ones, they don't want anything to do with it. So you kind of got to get the right mix of staff on these housing units to make everything work and make everything successful.
I want to ask Jessica about the staff culture in a minute, but Lieutenant, before we move on, finish up what you're talking about, the phases. What's that final phase like? What are some of the privileges and responsibilities they get?
After they complete the yellow phase, they move on to the blue phase, which the blue phase is probably, it's kind of the longest phase. It's about 6 months long. And they go over like parenting, relationship, trauma-informed care, good citizenship, conflict resolution. And at that time, they can also start taking vocational training, custodial maintenance, landscaping, HVAC, building trades. They can get the flagger certification, like through Flagger Force. There's OSHA certifications, and there's also like a barber manager course that they're able to take as well. And
are these young offenders, are they typically going to, are they there serving short sentences, or are they going to be long termers, or does it run a mix?
It's a mix. We have juvenile lifers, you know, as long as they're between the ages of 18 and 22, they get enrolled in the YAO program here.
You can talk about why is it important for even a juvenile lifer or somebody that's going to be there long term to have these educational programs and vocational programs if they're not going to be released for, you know, decades or even longer.
Well, even though they're doing a lot of time, we're still trying to instill some of the just life skills that make it easier for them to be able to function in a prison setting. Now, a lot of times it is harder trying to sell a program like this to a young adult offender that's doing that kind of time. But it seems like they are more successful, even though, you know, they have to be here, you know, behind the walls, they're more successful when they participate and they buy into the program. Eventually, when they get out, it's still going to make them a better citizen as well.
And it makes them a better citizen on the inside as well, right?
Absolutely.
That's going to be their home for however long it's going to be. It's having educated and well-adjusted citizens of SCI Pine Grove is probably helpful for the entire facility.
We have the community work program where inmates go out and they assist different parks and recreations and churches and all of that kind of stuff, you know, to help them with the community. And it took a while, but they really, really became receptive to our community work program and our prison. At first, it wasn't. They kind of were like, we're apprehensive with us being in a small community like this, but it just progressively got better and better with us talking to the public and letting the public come in and see us one time. We had an open house in February of 2001. They came in and they got to see the entire institution, and and kind of explained, you know, what our whole circumstance and what we were doing to increase, you know, jobs and to keep the community safe. So I think the whole entire community is very, very receptive to us now.
Yeah, it's always interesting that our facilities kind of come into a lot of times these smaller communities and become some of the bigger employers in the area.
Yes, and it is, and it's very much so. We have over 400 employees here, and I believe we might be the second in the county for job growth and employment. It's a great job. I mean, the opportunities for promotions are endless. I think it's just family-based. At the beginning, it was extremely family-based. And of course, you know, with the progression of some facilities actually, you know, merging with us, it was a little bit of a culture shock, you know, with Crescent and Greensburg and Pittsburgh. But we opened up arms and I think we actually just, we made it better and we listened to their differences and their culture differences at those facilities and merged all together.
We're running a little bit short on time, but Lieutenant Townsend, I want to come back to you. Your job title of Intelligence Gathering Lieutenant. We haven't talked to somebody kind of on that security side in this series yet. I want to ask, what does your job do? How does it work to keep the facility safe?
It's actually a very unique position. There is actually only one IG lieutenant at every institution in the state. We work for the Bureau of Intelligence and Investigations. And basically, our role is to gather intelligence in the institution, and then we pass that information along so that it can be investigated by other members of the security department.
So you're kind of the liaison between the central office intelligence community and what's going on at your facility.
That's exactly the goal and, you know, the purpose of the program.
And Jessica, from your side on the administrative side, tell me about how the real work in the facility is done to keep the lights on and keep everything going. It's people don't always understand that a state correctional institution is like a city within a city. You guys take care of everything from maintenance to food service and everything in between.
Definitely, it's not just even a business, but it's actually a home. Like, we do it all. We do everything, cook and clean, and it's security and treatment, and they work very well together. When we first started, too, it was kind of like, oh, their treatment, their security, we don't really talk. Oh, the mix is so blended now. And yes, they all take care of everything. The inmates are very busy. We keep them working or going to school and attending different classes and we keep them basically busy, so they don't really have much downtime. And security does an exceptional job. Jason doesn't even tell you how well we really stand out with the security side of it, as well as treatment, too. But we keep a great handle on everything here. They feel comfortable and safe.
We appreciate Jessica Purcell and Lieutenant Townsend for their long careers of service to the Commonwealth, and thanks again to Superintendent McGinley at SCI Cole Township. You've been listening to the Pennsylvania Prisons and Parole Podcast. We're here with new episodes on the last Wednesday of each month. For more DOC content, check us out at Corrections PA on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn. On behalf of Executive Producer Kurt Bope, thank you for listening. I'm your host, Ryan Tarkowski. Until next time.